Minnesota, North Dakota, and Wisconsin are each blessed with an abundance of rich and valuable farmland. Whether it's planted for crops or used for pasture, land plays a key role in every farm operation. Hello everyone and welcome to the Rural Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Albrick with Ag Country Farm Credit Services, and today I'm joined by David Bau, Extension Educator with the University of Minnesota Extension. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks.
According to data from the USDA, over half of cropland within the U.S. is rented, along with a little over a quarter of the pasture land. How important of a factor do you feel rental agreements are to the overall success of a farm operation?
The rental agreements are very important to a farming operation. In southern Minnesota, I usually say two-thirds of the land is rented and one-third's owned. So if they can't get their rented land rented at a reasonable rate that's profitable for their operation, their operation probably won't survive without just their own land.
And that is kind of my next question, is given the current challenges within the economic environment, securing a good rental agreement looms even larger, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, the economics right now are really bad for both corn and soybeans. I use corn and soybeans as a major crop in southern Minnesota, and that can be up the River Valley as well, and Wisconsin too. The corn and soybean budgets are terrible for corn especially. Southern Minnesota farmers have lost money on corn in the Adult Farm Management Program since 2014, every year, through 2018, whereas soybeans, they haven't lost money yet.
Now, land prices have softened some over the past couple of years, but still have largely held their value. Have overall rental rates reflected this same trend at all?
Rents have gone down some from the tops, just like land values have gone down some. I do a land survey, 14 counties in southwest Minnesota, though, and in 18, the values went up 3.1% instead of down, and rental rates went down that time frame. So the rents peaked in southern Minnesota for an average of like 243. And right last year in 17, they were 212. I expect that to go down a little bit. So maybe around $200 for an average rent right now in Minnesota from a high of 240. And land value average was up to 8,500, those 14 counties. And now we're down 6,500 for an average. So that has dropped $2,000 is a drop, but there still are $8,000 sales, $10,000 sales, and there's $4,000 sales too, though.
That's still a good chunk of change even in today's world.
Yep, depends on where you're at in location and the value, but there's still a wide range in the land prices as well.
And is a lot of that based on just the productivity, of course, of the soil? There's other factors like irrigation, things like that?
I think the land values have held their own or done as well as they have for a number of factors. Number one, we talked about the rental rates. They haven't dropped as much as maybe they should have. With the corn and bean prices the way they are, the rent should be under $100 an acre. And I just said they're $200, so they're double what they should be for the economics. And if that stays where it is, that supports a higher land value. The second factor was interest rates. As lenders, you know that interest has a big factor in what the cost is to own the land and buy the land. They're ticking up a little bit, but they have been really low conservative for a long time, so that helps support higher land values. And the third option for that would be opportunities for other things, like the stock market last year had a negative total year-to-year return. I think that really helps land values because then land move out of the stock market into real estate. The interest rates at the bank ticked up on the CDs, which will hurt them a little bit, but that's still lower than what they can get for land values. So all those things play in a factor of what their options are. If there's still a lot of farmers that are cash rich and asset rich, and they're ready to leverage their existing land to buy more land. They are being more cautious, though. I was having a conversation just yesterday with a farmer. The seller wanted $85,000 to $80,000 an acre, and he thought that was a little too much. But that was an opportunity. It was available, offered to him at those prices, and he was not jumping at the bit to do that compared to a few years ago. He said, I would have.
Now, we'll certainly expand on this a little bit more a little later, but high level, what would you say a good rental agreement looks like in terms of being beneficial to all parties involved?
The best rental agreement would be a flexible agreement. I've been pitching those. I've been doing these talks for over a dozen years, and I've been pitching them. They've been growing. They used to be under 10%. Now they're maybe 20% of leases out there are flexible, which shares the risk and reward between the farmers and the landlords. They should have a base rent where they're not going to get less than a certain amount for the landlord, and the farmer's going to have crop insurance to help them if they have poor yields and poor prices on the bottom part that way, and then they share. If they have good years, good prices, and good yields, they'll both make more money. If the margins are tight and the prices are low and yields are low, the landlord might get his base, but at least they have that agreement. I've seen those leases in place for over 20 years, and they adjust accordingly. Once they get them set up, they work good for both parties.
Now, when you travel around doing these types of workshops that you are currently doing, or when you're working with farmers and ranchers, What are the most common things you tend to hear?
Well, from the landlord's side, they'll look at my rental rates that I show, the actual rental rates from farmers' records, and they'll say, oh, those are way too low. From the farmer's side, they'll look at my budgets and they'll say, oh, that's a realistic number. But again, from the landlord's side, they say that's way too low again, because I show numbers like that they can pay $100 rent. And the landlords have taxes of $100 an acre, some of them. So that's not even making any money for their investment in land. So that's the big challenge for landlords, is to figure out what they think is a fair rent at the current situation with the property taxes the way they are, with the rental rates the way they are, and the economics of corn and soybean budgets. There's really a struggle there, because there's at least $100 difference between the farmer's side and the landlord's side to what that fair rent is.
Now, playing off some of those same conversations, what are the biggest complaints, both from landowners and renters?
The biggest complaints from the landowners, I think the fact that they don't care about the economics of farming. They just see the asset as a, what can I get back for return on my investment, and what can you give me for an annual in my pocket kind of a thing, which as we get more and more removed, the landlords are multi-generations getting removed from the actual ones that farmed or retired from farming, and the next generations don't have the tie to the land and know the economics of farming like the retired farmer would know. So if we move farther generation-wise, that gets harder for them to convince those landlords what's going on. From the landlord's side, they think the farmers are not necessarily telling them the whole story. There's got to be a way that, because my neighbor's getting $200 or $300 rent, why can't you pay that to me? Well, there's got to be something going on, because the numbers aren't showing that you can do that. So what's the whole story? What's the truth? And so it's really hard for the both parties to have trust, get even the flexible agreements, or have to have an amount of trust between the farmer and the landlord to share what is the yields, what are the costs. All those different things have to go together to work for a good relationship.
Now, with fewer and fewer people farming, it's really not that surprising that there's a growing trend or amount of landowners that aren't farming themselves. You just touched on this. What type of opportunities and challenges then exist within that framework that seems to be becoming the norm?
The biggest challenge I see for the landlords is, like, they did a survey in Benson County, or Swift County in Benson, the county seat, that said 65% of the land is owned by widows. And so that's the landlord that the farmers are dealing with. And that's really a challenge. I'll give you an example in Candyhoy County here where we're sitting today. A lady was getting $39 an acre rent for 39 years. Hadn't changed. Just recently. You know, in that example, she has been taken advantage of severely by the farmer. And other farmers are going to pay top dollar to those ladies. So that's something that you have to really be concerned about. And then oftentimes that person that is getting taken advantage of, it takes somebody else to make them aware of the fact that they're not getting fair treatment, you know. But on the other side, I've had landlords that have land in five counties. They get $135 an acre rent, and they're happy with that because they don't want more money. And on the other side of that, I get landlords that have $400 an acre rent, and they want more. So it's really a challenge for the meeting of agreements and getting what's the fair middle ground, what's the fair number, what's the right approach. And this morning we had a discussion even after the workshop for probably half an hour between farmers and landlords, and there really is no set right path, but there's kind of some middle ground we hope they get to.
Now, some people even rent from multiple landlords, so that compounds potential issues even more.
Yeah, like one farmer, he was at a workshop, he said 15 landlords. That's where they have to treat everybody equally. That's really the challenge for them, because if they don't treat them equally, they'll find out eventually. So they can't give one person a better deal than another person, and that's the challenge. So you can get to a place where one person is setting the rents for the area because they're paying that rent for everybody. And then once that's wears out there, neighbors have to pay the same to keep up their own land in their hand.
Additional USDA data shows that nearly 3/4 of tenants that have rented land have done so for more than 3 years, and over 1/4 of those have actually rented the land and remained with the same tenant for over 10 years. This data suggests that when someone rents land, it tends to be a longer-term relationship. What can renters do to foster these relationships and turn them into something long-term?
Well, in general, again, as these owners of the land, the landlords get farther and farther removed from the area, from the connection to the farm, they also lose connection to who are the options to rent the land to. So as long as the landlord feels they're being treated well and kept given a reasonable amount of a return for their investment and given a fair treatment and the farmer's taking good care of them, there's not a tendency for them to change. And they don't really have and easy access to find local bids. A lot of times they're not in the same county even. They're elsewhere in the country or in the state, and they only talk to the farmer, and the farmer, they don't know the conditions in Candy Hoy County or wherever they're located, and they can't have a competition. So that's why a lot of times if they think they're getting a fair deal and they're getting treated right, the landlords are content, and they won't change farmers. And that makes the consistency, like in my family farms, that have been the same farmer's hands for 50-plus years on one side and 40-plus years on the other. So the same farmer's been farming. He's going to be 80 this year. He's still farming it. You know. So once you get a good relationship and they think you're being treated fairly, there's no reason to change.
Now, there's no question that there are some barriers of entry into farming. Is renting land a good way to get your feet wet when you're a younger or beginning farmer?
It's really a challenge for beginning farmers to get farming, started farming, and the most time they're going to have somebody who's willing to give them a grub stake, which probably means a family member, a relative, or somebody who's willing to say, I'm going to give you a chance to start farming at a reduced rate or incentive to make it, whether I share my equipment with you or whether I give you some way to make your cost cheaper. Because if I have to go out and pay top dollar to get the latest land off the market, my land cost is going to be higher than my neighbors. So I've got to have some way to offset that cost with some other areas, which oftentimes means I need somebody to help me, which oftentimes is a family member who will say, yeah, you can use my equipment on your land. Or yes, we'll supply the labor and equipment in your land, and if you help with your labor on my land. Or, you know, those all kinds of those agreements. So there are barriers for the young person to get in there, especially someone who does not have the ties to somebody who can do that relationship with them.
We are speaking with David Bao, Extension Educator with the University of Minnesota Extension. When a landowner comes up to you and says that they would like to start renting out their land, what advice do you have for them?
Most time the farmer has the advantage over anybody, because they know what they're paying for rents. They know, have a good touch with their neighbors. They have a good touch with what the area rents are, what they've been paying for rents. So oftentimes they have the advantage over the absentee landlord to know what is a fair rent. And so what they have to decide for themselves is what kind of lifestyle they want to lead. They want to share a crop. They want to be just a cash rent. I've had situations where somebody retired and they got 5 years rent up front in 1 year, bought a travel trailer and took off around the country traveling. You know, so what are their expectations of retirement? What do they want out of retirement? What kind of lifestyle they want to lead? They will still want to be attached to it. They want to be willing to help farm the operation a little bit if they need help. There's all kinds of people that need help, from those retired farmers to help with harvest and planting and all the different. So there's a job opportunity there if they want it. There's relationships to be developed, and then they have to decide how much they want for their return on their investment. Just like they can decide they want to help a young farmer out and help them get started. There's all kinds of options, but they really have to decide what they want to do with their land, and that also has a background of what they have for resources. If they have other investments outside the farm, if they can have the lifestyle they want without being dependent on that farm, that gives them a lot more opportunities for choices to how they treat that land too.
How about the absentee landowner then? What type of factors should be considered when they have land that's potentially up for rent?
Yeah, like in the workshop this morning, there was people their parents just died. They're landowners all of a sudden just because of that fact. So now they're wondering, how do we do this? Because it was family relationship. Rental rates was subpar average rents. They were getting a really good discount because it was mom renting to son. Now it's sister renting to brother. How do you take with those situations around? And that's that absentee landlord has to figure out what they want. Again, do they want? And there's not one right answer for anybody. Again, it's family. When you're dealing with family, if it's not family, it's different. But with family, I see people charging top dollar, and I see people giving them a break. So there's a decide how they want to do that first of all. But if it's just a neighbor, the hard part is for the absentee landlords to find out what is the going rate, what are the trends, what has been happening, what did my previous renter get on this parcel? That's not even necessarily public knowledge. They might not even have access to us. So they bought it at an auction. They don't even know what it rented for. So there's a lot of variables they have to try to find out and get some background as to what the local economy is, what the local rates are, what has happened to the piece that they're trying to rent out now, and what the trends are, and then correlate that to what they think is a fair return for their land.
So how about on the flip side of things? Are there things to consider if you're a farmer looking to possibly rent land?
Well, the farmer looking to rent land has to look at the quality of the land, period, and like this year was a really good example of the wet we were this spring. We have prevented plants in a lot of areas. There's a lot of variability in quality of land by the tiling, by the water runoff, and that was a really good example to say, well, I got two parcels, and one will hold the water and get rid of it, or one will sit there and drown it out. So they, but the both landlords want the same rent. So they have to decide the quality of land, does a little background work with the soil types, what has been the yield on that farm. They probably can't get that from the actual farmer who did farm it, because unless it's a retired farmer, because it's private information, but they should try to get as much background on the parcel as to what they can expect for yield, how they can expect it to go forward, if it needs tiling or what improvements it might need, and then figure that back into a rental rate that's fair for both parties.
So as we talked about before, it's a tough commodity environment out there. You mentioned flexibility a little bit earlier. So what options do exist to provide that flexibility to both parties?
The simplest flexible rental agreement is just say a set amount of bushels. And I usually tell them a third of the corn bushels and maybe 40% of the bean bushels, the normal APH on the farms. Take those bushels and the rent's based on those bushels. And then that'll adjust every year as the yields are better or poorer. It's using that APH going forward. And then the only variable is price. And that's what the farmers can't control, and the landlord will get the benefit of better or worse prices, but they know their bushels, and they're taking a proportion of the gross, just like is historically, and like his long-term average is about a third of the gross goes to the landlord from the renter, and about 40% on the beans go to the landlord of gross.
So do you see that profit sharing or sharecropping as a common practice today?
Sharecropping has pretty well disappeared because of the fact that the corn budgets have lost money since 2014, and it's still out there. I'm not saying it's totally gone, but if you're a landlord and you pay part of the expenses and your return is just like the farmer's negative on corn, you're not getting any money, whereas if you just rent cash rent, you're getting a lot higher payment. So that's been a big reason why sharecropping has been disappearing.
When we're going through the rental agreements, is this a year-by-year deal, or is this a multi-year contract on average?
I just go in general, I'd say more leases are year-to-year now than they have been. There's still 3-year leases out there. There's still 5-year leases out there, even 7-year. But the longer-term leases have to look at the future and kind of adjust where that fair number is. It's hard to determine the farther out. And because of the variability we've had in farming so much lately, they've been more and more 1-year leases, so they don't lock in. If prices improve next year, I want to be, as a landlord, get better rent next year. You know, so they do these year-to-year situations more often. I'd say 30% of leases are cash up front. Another 30% are half and half, and 20% are probably flexible leases, and then the rest is probably share crop.
Now, I know the University of Minnesota Extension has some worksheets available regarding land rent contracts. Where can people go to access that information?
Well, there's a couple sources. Land rent contract information is a great resource. Is aglease101.org. It's done by 12 North Central States of Extension, and they've put out, there's blank lease forms they can fill out online for cash rent, for flex rents, for building rental, and for pasture rental. They're all available online on aglease101.org to fill out their definitions, their terms, and their blank leases. And then University of Minnesota Extension, if you go to extension.umn.edu, we have worksheets on for the landlord to fill out what they want for return on their investment, for the farmer to fill out what they think they can pay for rent, what's available for rent, and we have budgets, we have trends in rental rates, so there's a lot of information on that website as well.
Of course, there's going to be people listening along from outside of Minnesota and things like that. Other extension agencies across different states have other good resources as well.
North Dakota does a great job. They have rents by county. They have budgets by regions from the Adult Farm Management Program. They have like 20 different crops. You can look at the profitability. Unfortunately, they don't look very profitable either, most of those budgets. But you have an opportunity from their website. If you go look, there's a lot of good information that's there. Wisconsin does some of that as well.
So if we could just sum up what we've kind of talked about today, the most important parts, get it down to an elevator speech when somebody asks you about rental rates. What's the most important things to know?
Well, if I'm a farmer, my most important things, I want to try to convince the landlord that I'll share the good times and the bad times and do a flexible lease. It's probably where I want to go, because the current cash rental rates are too high compared to the economics right now. So they want to try to work them towards a flexible lease where there's a base rent and then the components on price and yield, if they want, that'll adjust accordingly up or down. They're not going to be lower in the base. From the landlord's side, they have to look at what they think is a fair return for their investment, what they're holding, and say, well, what am I getting? What have I been getting? And they have to kind of maybe lower their expectations a little bit because of the corn and bean prices falling so much. I use an example. We had 3 years where corn was above $6, and we had 4 years where beans were above $12, and corn's fallen about in half the price, and beans have gone about a quarter in price down. So those economics have changed enough. The landlord has to change their desired rent accordingly.
Are there any final thoughts you'd like to leave listeners today?
I would just say rents are a tough challenge right now. the economics. It's $100 difference between the spread of what the farmers should pay and what they probably are paying. And not that they can't make $100. It depends on what prices do this year. That's another big variable. We can't control prices. But right now it looks like another lost year in 19 for the farmers unless prices do improve.
I just want to thank you for coming on and talking with us today. We appreciate it.
All right. Well,
that's David Bao, Extension Educator with the University of Minnesota Extension. That will do it for us on this episode of the Rural Perspectives Podcast, which is a production of Ag Country Farm Credit Services. To get more great content, please visit www.agcountry.com.